Science Friday is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with AutoQuote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, it's Flora Lichtman, and this is Science Friday. Today in the podcast, we have the next episode in The Leap. This is a series I made with the Hypothesis Fund, and we're taking you to an erupting volcano where a scientist faced some tough choices.
People of St. Vincent and the Grenadines and residents in our blessed land, I hereby order the evacuation of all premises in the areas designated as the...
Let's deal with the elderly. Those with children. Those with children at the front, please.
In April 2021, La Soufrière volcano on the Caribbean island of St. Vincent started exploding.
The long dormant La Soufrière volcano erupting Friday.
Holy, it's really erupt. My God.
Thousands evacuating as ash rains down on the island of St. Vincent.
If you're listening to this, or if they're not listening, get the message to them.
The volcano had been rumbling for months, but to get people evacuated in time, one scientist was tasked with predicting exactly when the volcano was going to blow.
Good morning, Professor.
Professor Robertson.
From Professor Robertson.
Who's one of the foremost authorities in the Caribbean.
Professor Richie Robertson. He's a volcanologist, the former director of the University of the West Indies Seismic Research Center, and a world authority on La Soufrière volcano. He's got an important job and a fancy title, but this is how the people on St. Vincent see him.
Richie's a real Caribbean boy. He feels like one of us.
That's Stacey Edwards, Richie's colleague. They've known each other for a long time.
There are no airs about him. He's very, we would say, very rootsy. He struggles to put on ties. And I mean, he's just very rooted in the Caribbean in terms of his personality, his style, and his heart.
And when his island needed someone the most, he was the one who stepped up. A born and bred Vincentian who struggles to put on ties, but was willing to put everything on the line to keep his community safe.
There is no way you could monitor a volcano without a certain element of risk.
It's just part of the job.
Yes, it is.
This is The Leap, a new series about gutsy scientists who are risking their reputations, their careers, and even their lives to uncover something new. When you think about the occupational hazards of science, stuff comes to mind. Toxic boss, difficulties raising money, running a lab, getting tenure. But the list typically doesn't include getting burned up in a pyroclastic flow, or whether your interpretation of data could mean life or death for thousands of people in your community. But that is Richie Robertson's brand of science. So how did he find himself here in this perilous, high-stakes job?
This is an amazing story, really, given what I end up actually doing.
Richie's career traces back to one formative moment in his life, another eruption of the same La Soufrière volcano. It was 1979. Richie was 18 years old, in school, in the art track. He had no plan to go into science. He'd barely taken a science class when La Soufrière started exploding.
A volcanic eruption is really a big deal on a small island. It's a big deal, full stop, because if you see a volcano erupting, and when I say an eruption, our volcanoes erupt explosively. So when they erupt, you can't help but see them.
La Soufrière volcano looms large on St. Vincent. I mean, it's literally the highest peak on the island, but it's also a central character in the island's story, like a sleeping giant that occasionally wakes up and kills scores of people and destroys their homes. But in 1979, most people on the island had never witnessed an eruption firsthand, including Richie.
So the day of the eruption was a religious holiday. It was Good Friday. And so it was a public holiday. But that Good Friday, you woke up. And what got you awake was the sound of the roaring mountain. And as you went outside, what you saw was a mushrooming cloud that just kept rising. And it appeared like if it was alive, it looked like a cauliflower shape that constantly expanded. I mean, that itself was impressive.
Richie lived far enough away to be safe, but his grandmother lived in the north, much closer to the explosion. So Richie and his dad hopped in the car to bring her to safety.
And of course, you go in towards this thing, which is frightening and also, you know, exciting. You're a young person, it's exciting, it's amazing. But as he moved towards the north, what you saw was the whole country was on the move. It's like there were people who were walking, there were people with a little bundle, people on the back of donkeys, people who were in cars, and they were heading away from you. So you're heading towards this plume, and people are moving away. So again, extremely exciting.
The town where Richie's grandmother lived, Rose Hall, was pretty close to the volcano.
Close enough that by the time you get to Rose Hall, you almost feel like you could touch the plume now, and it's still expanding. And the whole village is in uproar, you know, people are trying to get out. So we went to collect one person. It was an open vehicle. We went to collect one person. And when we went out, the entire back of the vehicle filled with people and whatever belongings they had. The vehicle was ram-packed with people. You could barely, there were almost people jumping onto it that couldn't hold.
Richie also volunteered in the evacuation shelters. He was a member of the cadets, a kind of youth National Guard, and was dispatched to help. At one point, 18-year-old Richie was running a makeshift church shelter in charge of dozens of adults. Adults who were stressed, displaced, and arguing over their cramped living quarters.
All of those kinds of issues, never having dealt with them before, okay? So I then had another experience. Now I saw what the volcano, the effect it was having on people.
At the same time, the cadets were called in to help the scientists monitoring the volcano. The instruments needed to be watched every minute of the day, and Richie volunteered to take some shifts.
I was then at the Belmont Observatory looking at the drums. They had showed us certain things that if we saw, we had to wake them up and that kind of thing. So I then had that to see. I guess as a young person, if you wanted to get an introduction to how things operate when a volcano goes boom, I mean, that was it.
While Richie was getting this intensive education in disaster response, he discovered that the people at the center of it were scientists. They held the knowledge that all Vincentians were desperate to know. What was happening with the volcano? What might happen next?
And in fact, because they became so important, we all in St. Vincent got to hang on the words of the scientists. We call them all kinds of things, and we used to call them ologists. So everybody was an ologist. You know, because we've heard for the first time about these people that we call volcanologists and seismologists and geologists. These were people that we had never heard about before. And I was amazed. You know, when they speak, they just seem to have so much knowledge. They just seem to know everything about the volcano.
But there was something else Richie noticed.
What I noted was that all the scientists and all the professionals who were advising us were from outside of St. Vincent. I didn't see anybody who was a Vincentian who was advising the government, who was advising them, telling them. And for some crazy reason, I decided that I would become that person.
Why did it feel so important to have a Vincentian doing the advising? Like, why was that? Why were you like, yeah, that needs to change?
I guess at the time, I was a young person. I was, to a large extent, given what I was doing at the time, I was very patriotic. I was in cadets. I was in all these organizations, these youth organizations. So I always had that kind of very nationalistic mindset. I'm still, to a large extent, very, very patriotic. You know, I've traveled all over the world, and I tend to relish in saying that the only passport I have is a Vincentian passport.
1979 was historic for St. Vincent, politically too. A few months after the volcano erupted, St. Vincent gained independence after nearly 200 years of British colonial rule. It was a time when a lot of Vincentians felt patriotic, and Richie did too.
As a young Vincentian, I felt that, you know, if we had this system that was having such a big effect that we obviously would have to deal with, that we really needed to have the capacity to deal with it locally.
Richie decided in that moment to make a complete left turn in his life.
So I decided then that I would switch from being essentially an art student to becoming a scientist who was a professional that understood volcanoes, because I needed to help people in St. Vincent deal with the future ones.
But unlike 99.9% of 18-year-olds who wake up one day with a random career idea, Richie actually did it. He switched to the science track, he got a PhD in geology, And in a twist of fate beyond his control, when La Soufrière volcano woke up again, he was the scientist in charge. Almost exactly 42 years after that audacious decision to switch paths, he was exactly where he dreamt he'd be.
I don't think I thought that I would actually end up being exactly in the position that you thought that you should be. I mean, it's surreal in a sense. I mean, you can't write that script.
If you were writing the script, the next act would start in the year 2020. It was December. By then, Richie was the director of the Seismic Research Center and was in charge of monitoring the volcano, when suddenly it puffed back to life.
There was an observation by a guy who lived in the same Rosal where my grandmother lived. In fact, a guy who's actually a distant relative of mine. He woke up the morning and he started to see white steam emitted from the volcano. And usually you should not see steam from the volcano.
So Richie dispatched a local team to look into it. And that team climbs up the volcano.
And while they're at the summit, they call me and they tell me what they were seeing. And immediately, as soon as they told me what they were seeing, I realized what was happening. The volcano was, in fact, erupting.
La Soufrière volcano was slowly oozing out new magma, creating a kind of pancake or dome in the crater. It was in a gentle phase of its eruption, but Richie knew that could change.
Soufrière and Simmons is one of the volcanoes that ramps up very fast. So I told them, get off the volcano as quickly as you can. If the volcano is erupting, you should not be where you are. And we then mobilize a team to go to the island as quickly as possible.
So Richie, who was based in Trinidad at this point, is dispatched to St. Vincent with a small team. It's peak COVID, so there's all these complicated restrictions. And in fact, he quarantines at the very observatory he volunteered at 42 years earlier. This time, his scientific objective is predicting the future. He needs to figure out exactly when the volcano is going to transition from this gentle dome-building stage where the magma is confined to the crater to the explosive stage where it starts shooting magma out onto the flanks of the volcano.
Where people are living. So it's key, once the explosions happen, you need to physically get people away. Because if they stay there, they're more than likely going to die.
The trickiest part was getting the timing right. Richie had to give the government 24 to 48 hours of notice. That was the sweet spot.
Because if you said it was going to explode and it doesn't explode within a certain time and you have moved people, what will happen is that the people will go back. And it's a chance that when they go back is when it will actually explode.
Predicting something's going to happen in 24 hours seems difficult to
right.
me. Like,
yes.
How do you check a bunch of boxes or how do you do that?
There's not a fixed set of boxes that you tick, but there are a set of signals that you would expect to see, certainly in terms of the seismic instruments, in terms of the gas. There's a set of things that would indicate to you that fresh magma is getting close to the surface. And once you get to that stage, you get a good estimation of what is likely to happen in the short term.
Which is what scientists do all the time. Capture data, integrate that data, draw a conclusion. It's just that in Richie's case, that science meant life or death for 20,000 people.
And remember, there was a little bit more pressure on me personally, because I'm not just any scientist. I'm a Vincentian scientist. And I think the Vincentians would not have been very impressed if we had gotten it wrong. So there was a lot of pressure to basically make the right call.
There was also a lot of pressure to make sure Vincentians heeded the call when it came. And while that wasn't strictly Richie's job as a scientist, he and his collaborators at the Seismic Research Center made it their mission to build trust before the volcano blew.
Trust is critical.
This is Stacey Edwards again. She's the manager of education and outreach at the Seismic Research Center.
If the public does not trust you as the agency or the entity giving that information, then they're going to do their own thing. And it's even quadruply important in these social media times when everybody is an expert.
Making sure Richie became the expert that people trusted was a big focus for Richie and Stacey. And the fact that Richie was a local with only a Vincentian passport cut both ways. On the upside,
I sounded like them. So you tend to have a certain affinity to people that sound like you. It's a natural human thing. You know, you hear an accent, they sound like where you come from. You know, you hate them even more. So I think that helped.
But it also wasn't that simple.
They still have to prove themselves, huh? Many in the context in these kind of global South countries where some people may have a perception that if it's outside of the Caribbean, it has to be better. If it was made outside of the Caribbean, if the person was trained outside of the Caribbean, it must be better, right? And I think that's all part of a kind of colonial legacy and mindset. In the Caribbean, our countries are relatively new. And I think coming out of that kind of legacy, it means that you have to work extra hard to ensure that you're maintaining that trust, that we are the authority, we know what we're doing, you need to listen to us, because it's easy to pay attention to voices from outside.
So while Richie was monitoring the volcano for signs that it was going to start exploding, he was also doing regular public dispatches.
Hi, Richie. How are you doing?
Hi, good morning, Stacey. I'm fine.
Keeping the public informed.
What's the latest updates with La Soufre?
Well, it's continued to do what it has been doing for the last, since it started for the last week.
For many months, the volcano didn't do much. And then in early April, things started to change.
Professor Robertson, we've had some increase in activity, particularly this afternoon, and
there was a series of earthquakes, a seismic swarm, and that can be a key indicator that the volcano is going to go explosive. Richie knew he was going to have to make this call soon, and he felt he needed one more instrument on the volcano to get the data he needed.
What is called a multi-gas meter that detects different kinds of gases coming out from the volcano, because we were concerned about whether sulfur dioxide, which is one of the things that we expected to come out just before an explosion happens.
It was a key piece of data. But to get that meter in place, Richie and a team had to go onto the volcano. A volcano that was in transition. A volcano that could start exploding anytime.
So yes, we were on the volcano because we took a calculated risk that we needed to get additional information to tell us when the explosion was going to happen.
Talk me through the risks of going onto an erupting volcano. Like, what are the risks of that?
Apart from dying?
Well, how could you die? Tell me all the ways.
Wow, and it's a really, really bad way. There are a number of ways. If the volcano is exploding, what essentially it does, it's breaking up masses of hard rock and essentially pelting it, ejecting it into the atmosphere. If you're on the volcano itself at the summit, the fragments of rock that could fall on you, on your head, the very least they will do is give you a serious headache. The worst they could do is they could basically squash you into the ground. So you have problems with falling rocks. You have problems with the fact that you're also going closer to where the gas concentrations are such that you could actually be harmed by gas. So those are the falling rocks, the gases. But one of the most dangerous things from exploding volcanoes is the things that they call pyroclastic density currents. Another name for them is a glowing avalanche. It's like a hot, rapidly moving, and when I say rapidly moving faster than 100, 200 kilometers per hour, shooting down the mountainside. It strips everything off the mountainside, all the trees, all the grass. So if you're on the volcano at the time when it explodes and one of those things come down it, you would end up in the sea as a charred remain. So. Yeah, it's not for the weak-hearted.
Do you have family, kids? Like, were there people who were like,
yes,
please do not do this?
Yeah. Well, hopefully they don't listen to this podcast and they don't hear anything that I get up to. No, I don't. I try to minimize the extent to which they are aware of
some
of the risk I take. Yeah. I don't think my daughters will like the fact that I take so much risk. They don't need to have the details. I take calculated risk and they don't need to worry about that.
That day in early April, Richie and crew got dropped on the volcano via helicopter. They've got thermal suits on and gas masks, and they're lugging a bunch of heavy gear. A couple 12-volt batteries like you have in your car, solar panels, pipes. They'd have to make a couple trips from the landing spot to the top of the volcano. When suddenly, they got a call from the observatory.
We got the call that something was happening and that the helicopter, they had told the helicopter to come back for us.
The observatory registered more earthquakes. It was another seismic swarm. Remember, this is a key indicator that the volcano could start exploding at any second. What were you thinking when you heard that?
That we need to get off the mountain as quickly as possible.
They jumped in the helicopter and got off safely, but Richie was determined to get this instrument on the volcano. When the earthquake stopped, he went back to put the meter in place. After he got off the volcano, the earthquakes picked back up, and things didn't quiet down again.
Anything that we didn't finish, that was it. We didn't come back after that.
That was it. That was your last window.
That was the last window, yes.
You snuck it in.
Yes, we did. We did. Just barely.
Just barely.
Yeah.
At this point, things were getting tense. It was crunch time for Richie. And you can hear the urgency in his voice, in his dispatches to the public.
What should people be doing now?
They should really make sure that they know exactly where they are. Yeah, are you in the orange zone, red zone? What's your plan? What's the community plan? What's your individual
plan? A few days later, he'd seen enough. He told the government he thought the eruption would happen soon.
I hereby order the evacuation of all premises in the areas designated as the red zone.
And then Richie had to wait. And that was agonizing.
Because once you had made the call, the then challenge comes is that questioning whether or not it's the right call or not. It's kind of a funny thing. You don't really want it to go explosive because you know what's going to happen when it goes explosive. It's going to damage things. It's going to mess up the country. It's going to cause a lot of harm, you know, make life difficult for a lot of people, which is what it did. But you want it to happen also because if it happens, scientifically it's interesting to look at, but also it justifies your existence in a sense.
All these emotions were swirled up. The dread of the destruction coming, the thrill of seeing it erupt. I mean, scientifically, it's kind of what you live for as a volcanologist. And then the overwhelming worry, was the evacuation call correct?
For me personally, I think that was some of the most difficult time in the entire eruption, actually.
But it didn't last long.
The volcano has spoken.
The volcano is erupting. There's another explosive eruption ongoing.
A big ball of smoke.
I don't know if all you can hear the rumbling, but you actually hear the volcano rumbling.
Look at that.
And what we're seeing there is a huge plume of ash.
Wow. Wow.
La Soufrière volcano exploded the day after Richie called it. He got it right. Many people had already been evacuated by the time it started spewing lava. The rest were on their way. No one died. But there wasn't time for a victory lap, because even though 20,000 people were evacuated from immediate harm, there was other fallout from the eruption.
You just had tons of ash being ejected. After a while, we couldn't see anything.
There's a lot of ash everywhere.
It's like snow. Car got stuck here, trying to get the car out.
My feet were literally sinking inches.
The entire landscape was bathed in white, gray ash. You're basically living through this doomsday kind of landscape, you know, fire and brimstone kind of thing.
At one point during the eruption, rocks started dropping from the sky.
Stones dropping now. Stones dropping. Bigger stones dropping now.
The ash was so bad that the power system shut down. So on midnight on Saturday, the entire island went black. No power. And of course, the entire country is in panic mode.
You can hear it in people's voices from interviews during this time, including Richie's.
You see films of people in war zones? This being a war zone right now with the volcano, so we shouldn't be here. But yeah, I mean,
yo, this is like a twilight zone. It's very, very scary, Joe.
I can't believe this is my beautiful hometown.
It's a very emotional time. There's uncertainty. You're not sure when the eruption is going to end. You know, many people had to leave their homes, and all of this is happening within the background of the pandemic.
The volcano spewed ash for days. People were sequestered in their homes. And just like in 1979, people in St. Vincent were hanging on the ologist's words.
We started to go on every morning. So every morning at a particular time, people would tune in live and they would get an update about what is happening.
This is NBC from studios at Richmond Hill in Capital Kingstown.
But this time, the experts weren't from somewhere else.
Of the Coast Guard boat to go along.
Richie and many members of his scientific team were local to the Caribbean. And Vincentians all over the country shouted them out for what was a relatively smooth response to a huge disaster.
I've seen some comments on social media. People are commending the team in terms of the evacuation order. They say the team did a good work. So it seems that people are giving you all, you know, good props.
I mean, we thank people for that. You know, it's the hardest thing to make interpretation of what's happening.
In terms of responding to the crisis, managing the people, managing the situation, which was really, really hard, it didn't overwhelm the system. It was done like if, okay, oh, we have volcanic eruptions every day.
And by making something so dangerous feel manageable and under control, Richie didn't just earn the public's trust. He earned their pride.
He really became a rock star for a little while.
I got kind of famous. In fact, it got to the stage where people would, you know, like a celebrity, they would ask you for a picture with them, a selfie and an autograph. And yeah, I used to run from people after a while.
It's pretty rare for a scientist to become a national treasure. But in Richie's case, it makes sense. Because it wasn't just about him. He became a symbol for something bigger.
I think it is super important for people, for us, I should say, because I'm from here, for us to see models where we are solving our own problems and we don't need to depend on somebody who's from a bigger country or somebody who is white or somebody who has more money or whatever to solve our problems.
Richie proved what he felt was true all along, that Vincentians could handle it. They could take care of themselves. The risks he took along the way weren't just in service of people, but this idea. Because on a small Caribbean island, this version of self-determination, handling hazards, is especially meaningful.
As we speak now, a hurricane has just passed through my homeland, and that's a routine thing. We are small islands over a large area of space, and we're impacted by lots of hazards. So we have a lot of issues to deal with. And really, we have to find a way in which we could live sustainably here. And the only way we could do it is trying to find ways of solving our own problems in our own ways.
What did it feel like for you to sort of be fulfilling your destiny?
Well, I still pinch it myself. Yeah. I keep saying I could have died the next day and I could have feel that, you know, I fulfilled my destiny in life, kind of.
The Leap is a production of the Hypothesis Fund. The show is hosted by me, Flora Lichtman, and produced by Annette Heist. Editing by Saeed Tijan Thomas Jr., Zhao Van Gay, and David Sanford. Fact-checking by Nicole Pasulka. Mixing and scoring by Emma Munger. Music by Joshua Budo Karp. Thanks to Rod Stewart. And thank you to you for listening. Ira's back tomorrow on the podcast with a story about using CRISPR gene editing to speed up the process of breeding some of our favorite foods, like think moving genes from the eggplant to the tomato.
The modern tomatoes took hundreds of years to develop from the wild species, and now we can do it basically in one generation.
That's tomorrow on the podcast.